Hey there, skippers and skipperettes. Episode 9 is here. We're back onto our regular twice-monthly schedule. We've got a lot of great podcasts coming in the following weeks, so make sure you stay tuned with your ear holes and have some fun. Today we're sitting down with skipper James Greathouse. Now, besides having the most kick-ass last name of any skipper ever, he was a trainer and lead in the Adventureland area from 87 to 93 and has some great stories. We were honored to have him. Even if I do sit there and yak the heck away, it's still fun to have him on the episode. As always, make sure you subscribe to us on Twitter at SkipCast and email us over at jungleCruise@gmail.com. We always love to hear your feedback. And if you love us, please throw some comments and feedback for us over on iTunes. We're getting a lot of hits and we want to make sure we have great visibility over there. And now, without further ado, episode 9 of Tales from the Jungle Cruise, The Beach Robbery.
Actually go into play.
Well, you know, my pre-Disney time, I was actually a regional manager in the carpet industry, and I actually sold all of the carpet for the Autopia retail store.
Oh yeah.
They had grass that they put down there. So, so I got to go into Imagineering, and I got to see some of the things they were like Winnie the Pooh before Winnie the Pooh, and some of the things they were talking about. And one of the things that I guess had come and gone was this concept of Villain's Lair. Real quick, we're actually taping. I'm just going to roll this right in because it's easiest to just do it, you know, very casually. So welcome to Tales from the Jungle Cruise, episode 9. I'm sitting here with Skipper James Greathouse. We will delve into his pedigree in just a brief moment or two. But anyway, so they had this roller coaster that was like X is up at Six Flags, where the concept was you were flying under Chernabog's wings. And it was a damn fine, because it was like a stretched out coaster where you lay underneath it.
Interesting.
And there was a park that was in planning stages before Animal Kingdom in Orlando called Villain's Lair. And I don't know how far they got along with the concept, but it was basically...
So before Disney Seas?
This was before Disney Seas.
Okay.
So they took some of those concepts, but they were going to have more of a coaster build.
Interesting.
And I think Everest was built off of one of the other coasters that they had originally put together.
Yeah, Disney Seas, I think, had originally, when it was going to go in Long Beach, had two coasters in it.
Yeah.
They had the big globe that was going to go in the center of the, it was nice, right downtown Long Beach, just never played out.
Disney Seas, for me, the big appeal of going down there, and I'm really sad that it's not in my budget anytime soon, is the whole Jules Verne area.
Yeah, absolutely.
And there's a ride, the whole Journey to the Center of the Earth, where you're in an active volcano. And it's basically just kind of like the Indiana Jones. It's the same kind of jeeps. So you go through the rest of this temple, you wind up in the middle of this active volcano, and then there's suddenly eyes all around you, like in Pirates, like little eyes everywhere, moving toward your rig. And then the lava starts, and the eyes run away, and your vehicle actually lifts up. Kind of like at Atlantis down at SeaWorld.
Right.
So it would be an elevator lift that would take the car up to the top, and then you would come down the outside of the mountain as the volcano was erupting.
Which is interesting, because the original concept for Indiana Jones had the Jeep hitting water and going down a river.
Yeah.
And it was supposed to go down a river and somehow look like you were getting into the Jungle Cruise River at one time or another. And of course, everything goes really high before they get into the budgets, and it got cut out of the budgets, but... Yeah. It's going to do a lot of interesting things before in the original design.
Yeah, I still think that, and we talked about this briefly in one of the other episodes, the best coaster idea that they've come to fruition with is the Crush Coaster at Paris, at the MGM Studios Paris.
Right.
And it's basically, it's like the two seats facing forward, two seats facing back, like in Orlando at the Primeval World.
Right.
But so you go through half of the coaster with the seats locked. So you'd be going up and down and
then
around.
The other part.
And then as you're going into the GAC, The Atlantic Current, you'd actually unlock and it would spin in a giant spiral going down. So
interesting.
So yes, we're talking, we're giant theme park nerds. Skipper James has agreed to come and sit with us tonight. We are in Fullerton. I'm sorry, we're in Huntington Beach.
My hometown.
Yeah, Huntington Beach. He's been gracious enough to bring me to show me the annual Running of the Hose, which is a competition they have here. And by annual, I mean weekly.
Late night Huntington Beach.
And by hose, I mean everyone down here. So Huntington Beach, I think, is stealing AT&T's slogan. It's more bars and more places. I think
this place really actually is getting better and better. I mean, they're getting more and more people to come down here, but it's definitely more and more bars, for
yes,
sure.
Yes, there are bars everywhere. So, yeah, it's... I know that I'm in Huntington Beach when I use when I hear the word holla used in casual conversation.
Now, wait a minute. They did have the annual tree lighting ceremonies, and there was a bunch of kids down here. That was
yes.
one night.
Yeah, the problem was is that it wasn't tree lighting. It was bong lighting. For those of Huntington Beach, I do actually now have international listeners. I'll talk some metrics in a second. But Huntington Beach is a coastal community to the west of Anaheim in the beautiful Disney area, where a lot of tourists do come during the daytime, but it's kind of a party city, and there's a couple parking structures with restrooms attached. They always smell like pot. There is just no way you can use
okay, now
a
come on,
here.
I'm going to have to sell my home city now. Now, this is also Surf City, USA.
Surf City is a beautiful town. A lot of Disney, you know, cast members.
You're just talking about the 3 or 4 blocks of the bars
yeah,
and the restaurants.
Yeah, no, there's just,
yes.
there's just this party area
Absolutely.
That's down here, so... but it's you know it's a gorgeous area and we have a fun time down here. I'm down here every week, every Tuesday. So let's talk a little interesting notes about the show. As this airs right now, the last episode was the fastest episode that I had to 450 hits
wow.
in 2 weeks. We are now broaching the 4,000 to 5,000 download range, like 4,700 right now.
It's becoming serious.
So we actually are doing well. I may have to do commercials at the start and end of the episodes.
Nice.
Just to pay for bandwidth. And we're going to start doing Skype interviews or Google Voice. I haven't decided. Starting next week, there's a couple of skippers. Joe Baca, I don't know if you know Joe.
I know the name.
Yeah. We have an interesting pairing. We have one skipper who became a Roman Catholic priest. And one who became a Jewish rabbi. And I'm going to try to do a three-way conference call because I think that's
that
going to
be
the most
good.
Interesting show ever. So, but the episode podcast is booming. I'd like to thank everyone who's tuning in and tuning back in after is the more important thing. So let's go back. You said you were there at the Happy Disneyland Park working for the Mouse.
Going into the holiday season in 1987.
87. And I want to point this out the same as I did for Chris Lamberth before I graduated high school. I wanted that to be clear.
Now, see, I have three daughters at home, so that's like adding dog years. It makes me even
yes.
older.
So 87 to 93.
87 to 93. When I hired in, they said at the very end of the, you know, you go through the normal... peer interview process, and I had three other people there with me, and they let the other two people go, and they said, hang around for a second, and after I stood around for the interview, they said, where do you want to work in the park? It was
yep.
actually back in the days when you could kind of pick where you wanted to work,
yep.
and I was foolish enough to say I wanted to work on the Mark Twain, and they said, okay, well, you have to start on the Jungle Cruise. I said, perfect.
We start on the small boats
Perfect.
And we work our way up.
Work our way up
you know,
to the big ones.
Could have been worse. They could have put you on canoes first.
Yes, no kidding.
And
no
then,
kidding.
Then worked your way up. I kind of got lucky in that regard where I hired in January of 2000. So I was California Adventure. I was actually opening California Adventure in that time frame. And
you never got sucked over to the other park, huh?
Well, I left and then came back and went to Disneyland.
Got it.
But at the time, they had nothing at Disneyland. They were only hiring for California Adventure. And I opened Malibuumer and Orange Stinger with Jim Farmer, which I know Jim is now a manager at Disney and somewhere. That I was my training buddy. We got trained by this giant guy named Mark, who was like a professional wrestler and 7-foot-tall Samoan guy who had been a Jungle Cruise skipper, and they took him off the ride because he was too tall to fit in the new reefer boats.
Oh, too funny.
So very, very tall gentleman. So when Indy reopened, they took him off of there and moved him over to other attractions. So, so they basically said, oh, you get to work over California Adventure. And I'm like, oh, wherever you want to put me, it's all good. And
at that point, I was happy to work working in attractions.
Yeah, no. And I'm sure that was very lucky on that side of it. So you started out at Jungle.
Started out at Jungle. Actually, I did Jungle for probably about It's probably only about 8 or 9 months, and then started working around to every other attraction, Adventureland and Frontierland attractions. And then only about 2 months later, it's probably right before my first year, I became a trainer in the area. Mm-hmm. So did training on Jungle Cruise first, and then Tiki Room and Thunder, and became a lead on each one of those. So I did the lead status thing in there after about 2-3 years. And even had a chance to back up the scheduler at the time, so it did scheduling for the area.
Now, was it landlocked at the time?
Yeah, it was landlocked. So it was Adventureland Frontierland Attractions at the time.
See, and it unlocked before I came back over in 2003. And at that time, you could cross over into West Side or East Side and work within the areas. So you had skippers like Maynard. I don't know if you...
Yeah.
Yeah, Maynard knew Honey, I Shrunk the Audience, and he knew... Lincoln, and he knew Jungle, and he knew Mansion, and he's the only person that I've known who worked in each of the four areas.
Yeah, back in the day when it was landlocked, you had to be an A status to actually get outside of your land area.
Yep.
And then it was very rare that you did, but you got out every now and then to get another attraction in there. I was trained on, besides Adventureland Frontierland, one time I got trained on Splash Mountain.
Yep.
So I was over there when they were opening and doing testing for Splash Mountain. But that's probably the only attraction I saw, actually, outside of the park, outside of my area.
Now, was, getting into, just at this point, trivia, was Main Street Tomorrowland when you were there, or was it Adventure Frontier?
No, actually, it was Tomorrowland.
Tomorrowland,
yeah. It was Tomorrowland
so it was
at the
time. Yeah. So.
The only time we ever crossed over a lot of times when we did actually Parade Route, and then I helped open up Fantasmic Guest Control.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's where we did a lot of crossover.
So now, one of the things that fascinates me about the jungle experience, you know, and I've had three or four other leads on the podcast. We haven't really talked about what it is to manage the ride from the viewpoint of, you know, obviously every cast member has a safety thing that they're looking at. With the show issues of Jungle, it can get a little bit where there's some, should be very black and white areas, but it gets a little gray every once in a while. How was it for you as far as the management side of it?
You know, it's interesting. When you know, you first start on Jungle Cruise, this feels very SOP. You're trying to just get the thing down and make people laugh and do the right things. And then as time goes on, you start breaking the SOP because you almost get a little bored with yourself. Mm-hmm. So you try to get some other jokes in and that type of stuff. Mm-hmm. As a lead, it was interesting, though, because as a lead, you almost wanted to go back to that, getting everybody back on SOP. You'd hear stuff at the dock and you kind of go, okay, that is so off show. So you kind of felt yourself being a little stickler at times as a lead, yeah. Although not to say we didn't have our fun.
Well, I think it's just a higher standard, you know, where, you know, we have a theory that now is developing as the episodes go on, that most of the non-SOP things happen because we're trying to amuse ourselves.
Absolutely.
And to impress the people who are around us.
Absolutely. And that's why most of the non-SOP jokes were always at unload and load, because you were trying to impress the skippers something they haven't heard yet.
Oh, absolutely. Right. I know. I fully...
Well, and it was interesting because, you know, in I think a lot of people's Jungle Cruise career, you know, you start off and you just love the Jungle Cruise because it's the first thing you do, and it's just mm-hmm. such a blast making people laugh. And then you do the ride over and over again. You kind of get to that point where you get a little bored with it, and don't bump around me. Let me get out of the boat as fast as I can. And then you kind of come full circle, and maybe it's that time when we just think, boy, we might be getting out of the park at some point in our life.
Yeah.
So enjoy it while we can.
Yeah.
And when you start to get to that point, you really start to almost go back and enjoy it for the purity of what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean to sound sappy about it, but it was actually, there was one time in my career towards the end, it was myself, I was a university lead, so I was teaching orientation at the park. Mm-hmm. And there was another university lead, Matt McNabb, a person that was getting into stand-up comedy, his name was Jeff Doss, and then Jim Mathis, who was teaching theater at the time.
Mm-hmm.
The four of us got together. We actually created a Jungle Cruise Spiel workshop class.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just Jungle Cruise Spiel workshop class, JC for JC. It wasn't part of the university system or anything else. And it was just trying to get people back into it, enjoying the art of it.
See, and your timing is going to be 2 years before kind of the birth of narrations.
Yes, absolutely. That's how it came about.
And that's also some of the things and I really want to find... I'm sorry, I've got names I need to float around and find, but I want to find some of the narrations guys, because that really seemed to be a point when it put the character in the park, you know, where you actually could develop yourself as a little bit more of a character, and I think that probably would have helped stem some of the... that was not a gunshot, just so you guys are aware, that was a car. But I think that would have helped stem a lot of the boredom that happens if you can actually create that, and you know... It always is amazing. Narrations make sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, let me give you a little background for anyone who's listening who doesn't know. From about 95 to, I want to say it was 98, 99, it was about a 2 or 3 year period, all of the attractions that had a narration driven thing were going to be put into its own department, and Jungle was the first of those, where it was going to be really about training the cast members not only in ride operations but in performance. But that's what always has kind of confounded me about Jungle, is it's a performance driven attraction as well as a safety driven attraction. I can't think of any other attraction at the park that combines those two elements. You know, you've got Interventions, which would have had tons of performance, no safety at all. Storybook, little bit of driving, but those things are so tame compared to Jungle. You know, I can't think of anything else where you're spieling and performing and operating a vehicle at the same time.
Well, and even taking that a step further, the Jungle Cruise, as we were kind of creating this class, and this is probably one of the most proudest things I was ever part of at Disney, was actually creating the spiel class, because the evolution of the spiel class became the narrations training class. And when we did it, it was interesting, because even when you look at the Jungle Cruise itself, the Jungle Cruise has a storyline even before you go through it.
Oh, yeah.
There's a build-up, there's a crescendo at the end, there's the scary part that gets back into getting safe again. There's a story before you even say anything. Mm-hmm. And we actually took the people back through, the Jungle Cruise skippers back through, and said, let's just look at the story. Don't say a single thing. Let's go on a deadhead. Let me show you what the story is. Now play off of that story. Mm-hmm. And it really got them back into, I think, the heart of what it was supposed to be.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, and it's... excuse me. And I think that's one of the things that changed with the indie rehab and the reorienting of the river, is it did change the story.
Right.
You know, it definitely took some time off of it, so there was less of a relationship built up with the skipper. The boats were longer. I mean, there's all these changes that happened, and I think it really did create a very different atmosphere. I rode Jungle. I was on my honeymoon on my marriage, which over for many years now.
When
ladies,
I said take a cruise for your honeymoon, I don't think that's what they meant.
You know, that was what I was trying to tell her. it was the weekend. It was a weekend before Indy opened, and we were able to go on the pre-ride. And I went on Jungle, but I never got to go on the old river track and all of those things. So.
Right.
But anyway, so from the management viewpoint, you know, and one of the things, we don't delve into the things that are covered by non-disclosure agreements, which a lot of the operations things are. But did you find that that the balance was easy to achieve between being a disciplinarian when you needed to be and also being a coach and a friend and all the things that you need? Because obviously the turnover's there.
So. Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I think, each of the leads, kind of like each of the Jungle Cruise skippers, each of the leads has their own personalities. So you had some people that were very disciplinary. I mean, you had people that would just, you know, bring it up, skip, hit it, skip. You just hear that over and over and over again. And they were just kind of they were more about the efficiency of the ride, mm-hmm, than about the show of the ride. Then you had the other people on the other side that were all about the show, and who cares how long the line is and how many people were getting on every boat. It's all about the show. And so there was so much freedom back when we were leads, at least when I was there, that you could kind of do different things. No one was really harping on one or the other. It was just, hey, you're a lead. Make sure this thing works great. However you do it, do it. But sure, there wasn't a lot of training on how to be a lead as far as how to run that ride. A lot about operations, a lot about efficiencies, but not about how do you keep the show at the time. So it was really kind of up to each of the individual leads. And a lot of that you got by just kind of coming down through the ranks. I had a lot of leads before me that were amazing, that taught me how to be a really good lead out there. And you always had to try to strike the balance. I think the best leads that I know, that I worked for, and that I got a lot of my tips for, they had a little bit of both. They had an understanding of what the show was like. Skateboard going by. They had a little bit about what the show was like, but they also had that operating efficiency. So, you know, some of the good leads, what they would do with me is they would actually take me out on a deadhead. Let's go out on a deadhead. Let's talk about what's going on, how the operation's going, but how the show's going as well.
Yeah, and that, I think that's where, I'm sure you worked with Jerry York.
Yeah, I did.
Jerry has, at least since I was there in 03, I mean, he's been the A-lead now for quite some time. Jerry has, I think the perfect balance of... a way of creating respect in the people that work for him, but also he's amazing in my eyes at training the people around him to make sure that there's a continuity to the lead team. Very much so. I can see his influence at all the leads who've been on the attraction that I saw. But, you know, Jerry just phenomenal as a person in general. I huge respect for him. I actually think you know, my theory is that jungle wouldn't be what it is today with all the changes that have gone through without his balancing of management and working with management, working with the skippers, being a friend to the skippers, being a friend to management, getting their respect. I mean, he really has a perfect balance of all of those elements. But no, I think Jerry has been great at making sure management gets the shit done that they need to get done as a management team, and from a legal viewpoint and all of those things, and also as a caretaker of the skippers. Another thing we've talked about on the podcast is that there's this cycle where your SOP becomes loose and tight and loose and tight, mm-hmm. as there's a response from guests and as there's a response from probably the legal department. I mean, did you see that there was definitely a cycle to what was allowed and, you know, what, how much leeway they would give you on the reins?
Yeah, you know, it was interesting. During my reign of time when I was on the Jungle Cruise, it was really run, and no offense to any of the supervisors there at the time, but it was really run by the leads. Mm-hmm. The Jungle Cruise and what you could say and could not say was determined, number one, by who the lead was for the day, and number two, how many guest complaints that we had, right? So no, don't get somebody going down to City Hall. If you don't do that, you're okay, sometimes was the rule. But it was really run by the leads. So the supervisors, you know, they were the people that would walk around and every now and then come by and stop by and see if everything was going okay. But it was really run by the leads. And because it was run by the leads, there wasn't, like kind of your example with Jerry York, there wasn't one lead that was running Jungle Cruise. There was one, Don Chapman was the A lead at the time, but everybody else could kind of do their own thing. So it was so, from one day to another, the Jungle Cruise would be completely different according to who you had as a lead.
Well, and I think also at the time, the guest count wasn't as big of a concern.
No.
So, and I mean, Jungle, you know, we were, you know, I don't want to get into NDA territory, but we had a certain number they wanted us to hit, and Jungle was always the place you would go when other rides would break down. That was when it had the lines, is when there was another attraction, you know, 101, that's when Jungle would get busy.
Right.
And now, I think Jungle went through a renaissance at about the 50th anniversary, where Jungle became an e-ticket again.
Right.
And I think it's fantastic to watch that, because it's, for me, it's a testament to the skippers and to the lead team to create that atmosphere. So.
Well, and I love everything they've done with the Jungle Cruise in the last couple of years, with the way the new dock looks, although I still love the old dock. But the way the new dock looks, the way the new boats look, I mean, it's all been extremely, there's been a lot of benefit and a lot of dollars that have gone into it.
And it's 16 years now.
Yeah, absolutely.
Since the rehab at Indy. So it's been that way for a while. We forget that it's not just yesterday.
Yeah, very true. But I, you know, even when I was teaching orientation at the park, you know, it was all about the four keys. It was always safety, courtesy, show, and efficiency. Look, I can even rattle them off in order. Mm-hmm. But it was always show before efficiency. And kind of the little joke after the, you know, my time and after we left, it was, man, did someone put efficiency before show? Because they started to get the counts were a little bit more important. You could tell they were pushing you through a little bit quicker. I think now I see a little, hopefully, resurgence of coming back and putting the show ahead of time, which is great. It's good to see, for sure.
And the park is definitely maintained better. And
absolutely.
And the look is created better. The costuming is better. I mean, although I still... You know, I miss the bullet jackets and, you know, the old look of the attraction. The new ones are great, and I know it's consistency with Orlando and all of those things. But yeah, it was nice.
I still even miss the circus canopies across the top.
Yeah, yeah. I guess one of the other questions, I think it's always an interesting way to go, is what brought you to. I mean, what was the big appeal? What brought you to the park when you were, just the job or?
Oh, boy. Mine was, actually, my mom was on, I think, somewhere around close to opening day coming into the park, and just loved Disney since, you know, she can remember. I remember coming ever since I remember all the time. So I always wanted to work at the park. I mean, I was kind of one of those kids that grew up that said, I got to work at Disneyland somewhere. And, you know, the first chance I could, it was actually coming right out of high school. I said, my first job, I got to do something. I got to go work at the park. So I guess I could say I was one of the Disnoids for sure.
Yeah.
I definitely wanted to work at the park. I knew I wanted to do that. And at the time, I thought Disney was going to be my long-term career. And everything that I took from Disney, I think, helped me in my career going forward. Mm-hmm. But I knew after you get there for about 5 years, you kind of want to get out and see the real world too.
Well, and you know, I think that's, we also talk about, you know, that people either stay for a year or 5 years.
And I think Or life.
And I think it's because they give you a pin. They give you a pin at your first year. They give you a pin at your fifth year. And then they stick one on your tombstone if you were there for the entire time.
Got to get my fifth, and once I get it, I
got
to go.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. You know, it's, oh, I got my fifth.
Well, it's interesting because now I've got my oldest daughter's actually working there at the park right now, and she's in her, I think she's in her third year right now, and we're already having conversations around the, are you doing the five-year thing? You're not doing the life thing. I'm not going to have you do the life thing. You need to move on from this and gain this experience and move from somewhere.
Sure.
And she's already successful in everything else she's doing, so she's going to be great. But we kind of already had that conversation around this. It's not a life thing for you. You're not going to be a attractions host or a merchandise host.
And I went into it when I was 30. So I was a different animal where if I wouldn't have been at a point where my ego was stronger than my common sense, I could have gone more into that direction, and I at times I wish that I would have, because I mean I think that I did university, and I did some work with public relations photography and some other things upstairs, and university was for me as much as anything the crowning time that I was there. It was doing traditions, doing line of business training. Yep. was phenomenal. But, you know, I think the...
Well, what's interesting is when I did the university, it was back when they used to have the university leader program, and one of the things they did as far as the training in the program, before we taught any orientation at all, they actually trained us for about, I would say, about 4 hours everywhere in the park.
Yep.
I did everything from food and beverage. I helped Pluto for the day. I think that's how we call it. We helped Pluto. I helped Pluto for the day. I was working different attractions that I've never seen before. I did custodial, all because they train you on that. So when you do the orientation and traditions training, mm-hmm. you could actually explain to them, oh, you're doing that job? I got to do that for a little bit. It's great. And this is what I know about it.
Yeah.
What a great way to bring people into the organization.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And it was, yeah, I mean, I always one of the most fun times. And it was, you could see the people who were going to be there for a while. And you can see the people who weren't going to be there
very quickly.
Yeah, the people who were not going to pass muster through the attraction were pretty easy to see. They were going out the door pretty fast.
Which is funny because even walking in the park as a guest today, you can still see those people. The people that are not going to be there longer, the people are just built for that job.
And then you see the people who will be bending over and picking up trash, using an ergonomic position for the rest of their life.
Absolutely.
Every time they go anywhere. I have a firm belief that every time I take someone's picture, you know, it's like a little karma for me. Or I'm taking their soul, one or the other. But no, it's good from that viewpoint. Did you have any great, traditions or training stories? Anything that happened that really kind of sticks out as a lifelong kind of a memory for you?
It's interesting. I look back on, you know, the time when I was back in high school and the time when I was working at Disney, and I think I have more close friends when I was working at Disney than high school. You know, people talk about more of their high school reunions. I'd rather go to a Disney reunion because of all the people that I've, you know, worked with there before in the past. And most of my, I'm trying to, let's say, keep my rehire status. So most of my experiences in the Jungle Cruise,
you blew my question.
I have the fun of actually, swimming with the hippos at times and getting thrown off of the skiff in the elephant pool and all that fun stuff.
I never went in the water. it never happened. And I only got to go on safari the last day of my first time around Jungle. I was two different hires. Only got to go on safari once, and I've done a lot of professional photography. Brought my beautiful SLR, digital SLR at the time. 6 megapixels was a huge deal. I had the lens, and I left both of my freaking batteries on the charger at home. So my last day at Jungle was captured with a disposable camera.
Opportunity lost with the big camera.
Disposable camera. Still got some good pictures. So
yeah, actually, that's how I found out that the elephant pool was deeper than the rest of the river by somebody throwing me off the skiff. And I thought as I hit the water, I was going to stand and realized that I sunk and my hat was the only thing floating on top of the
elephant
water.
Elephant and hippo.
Absolutely. That's how I found out it was deep by getting thrown in.
Well, you know, they say that the hippos are the most terrifying, evil, you know, animals, because everyone knows the devil is in the deep tails.
You know, it's actually, going back to your question, though, probably my favorite...
Thanks for overlooking that.
My favorite training moments, I think, were actually not the training moment, but after. Like, when you're teaching orientation or you're teaching even Jungle Cruise training, it's walking around the park, and I still walk around the park today, and someone will go, you were my trainer, or you were my lead. It's like, wow, I can't believe you still remember that. But, you know, it's such a memorable experience, because everybody goes through it in their own little way.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, it's nice. I had a time where I would get recognized outside the park.
Right.
You know, where I'd go somewhere and someone would be like, hey, you're my Jungle Cruise skipper. And I'd be like, yeah. You know, have a little moment and and bond. Hasn't happened for a while since I got the obligatory after Disney facial hair. You know, that grew out a little bit. The Disney look lasted about like 3 days after I left the park, so.
Yeah, it's hard not to have a big ego when you're working on something like the Jungle Cruise. It's, you know, people know you and recognize you. You know, you give spiels all day long, and then all of a sudden you get off the Jungle Cruise and you go walk across the park to go to the in-between, to the cafeteria, and people walk across, oh, you were my person on the Jungle Cruise. They let you off the boat? Yeah, they actually let us off the boat.
Now, you know, that leads to another interesting question. I assume since you have children that at some point you've probably either been married or... and I think you, like me, are outgoing, enjoy a good joke. Did for that time period, were you in a relationship? And did you drive whoever it was crazy with your sense of humor?
Absolutely. I think I drove actually all three of my girls crazy. So I've got three girls at home, and they probably know the Jungle Cruise about as well as I do because they hear those jokes over and over again. And every time we're at the park, it's like, come on, let's go on the Jungle Cruise one more time. I want to see if there's something else that I haven't seen or something else that I want to, you know, see again. And every now and then a Jungle Cruise skipper will surprise me with something new that I haven't heard before that's still staying with the story. And just, I love that stuff. Love that stuff.
No, it's... we've talked that the worst possible guest compliment was, that skipper was great. I've never heard any of those jokes before. That's one you don't want to get.
Absolutely.
I've gone through a couple relationships that have, the bane of them has been my sense of humor. And that's been a problem in a couple, so.
So many people, Chris Lamberth, the person that you talked to last in the last podcast, and, you know, we'll get together again and talk, and we'll just start going through jokes that we've been telling each other for years and years and years, but we still tell them again because it was funny back then. It's still funny again. Yeah. It's something that we just grew up doing, you know?
Now, is there, what's something that's stuck with you? What's the SOP or non-SOP joke? It's funny. You know, we do this podcast. This is episode 9 or so that we've done. So 8 or 9 hours of commentary. The emails that I get, and I don't get a lot. So, by the way, once again, let me remind everyone, as I stick this in the middle of the podcast, to email me, which we'd love to hear your feedback. It's junglecrews, C-R-E-W-S, @gmail.com. Or please follow me on Twitter, @skipcast, all one word, S-K-I-P-C-A-S-T. I let people know when upcoming things are happening with the jungle and the upcoming Jungle Cruise radio play, things of that nature. So... sorry, let me get back to that. So people ask me to spend more time telling stories about the jungle and ask every skipper what their favorite joke is. My feeling is about the whole favorite joke thing, it changes on a daily basis for me.
Yeah, absolutely does for me as well.
And I think that there are a few. So you know what? I will indulge the people who've asked. My favorite joke is not an SOP one, but it's in the spirit of the Jungle Cruise. It's when you get to the Native Uprising, you go, oh, look right there. Those are the guys we've been looking for. That's the Jungle Cruise band. They came out here looking for a new trumpet player, but they found the entire horn section.
Nice.
See? That's nice. My joke.
But very good. So. You know, it's interesting because mine does change over time. You know, from different parts of the Jungle Cruise or a different way a skipper might say something. Yeah. One of them I heard probably in the last 2 years, and actually my daughters and I both, we all cracked up on it, was we were coming around with the attacking natives. And normally you get the normal, there's the attacking natives and there's a duck, duck, duck. And it was still playing along with the Jungle Cruise, but it kind of got you a little bit behind the scenes because the Jungle Cruise skipper came around, and as you know, the attacking natives, they come up and then they kind of follow the boat. And then they, if you stay there long enough, they'll end up stopping and you won't hear anything. And they'll actually turn and go back down.
Right.
Well, the skipper played off it beautifully because they came up and attacked, and the Jungle Cruise skipper said, no, no, guys, no, guys, be quiet, be quiet, be quiet. And they kept, you know, he goes, be quiet. And they finally stopped. He goes, I told you guys, you attack on that side, not this side. Mm-hmm. Now stop looking at me. There's another boat coming. Look over that way. And they turned to reset. Now duck down because here he comes. Now do it right this time from that side. And they ducked down perfectly. And it was one of those jokes that catches you off guard because you haven't heard it.
Yep.
It just made us laugh hysterically.
I think I was watching John Lasseter was doing an interview about his favorite Jungle Cruise joke. And it's when he comes up to the dancing natives. And it says, oh, over there, that's they're looking for the restroom. And which, you know, joke we've all done.
Absolutely.
You know, a little pee-pee dance.
Absolutely.
But his punchline was amazing. He said, that's why they call them headhunters.
Nice.
They're looking for the restroom. So nice. That's one of my favorites.
Nice.
My goal is episode 30-ish is to get Lasseter on there. So
very good.
I was disappointed. I found a Don Lasseter. Not the same thing. Not the same person.
Not the same one. You know, it's interesting because even when we're talking about that spiel class, there's people that say that same joke. 10 skippers can say the same joke, but if you say it wrong, you don't say it with the right timing and inflection, sometimes it'll get the laugh, sometimes it'll get nothing.
I am shocked that the rear of the boat joke has not been stricken from the script because of how badly that is mangled.
Absolutely.
That joke has more bad tellings in that it could be hugely misinterpreted.
Absolutely. And it gets some stares sometimes.
But luckily, you've had 8 minutes to prep them for the fact that you're saying insane shit.
This is true.
So that kind of gets it to the point where there's a balance there.
I remember the big test for a Jungle Cruise skipper was when a boat derailed, and you actually had to sit out there on the jungle for about 10 minutes and do nothing but spiel.
Oh, yeah.
Now, there's some people that would just be quiet, but if you could do it, you could just sit there for 10 minutes and keep people laughing, but don't take them outside of the show.
Right.
But it's amazing, and it was a hard thing to do, but it was a fun thing to practice.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, and I never had an onstage six shot. I had a backstage six shot.
Nice.
Like to not go into that story again. but had plenty of other ones. I had a four shot. I actually had a medical four shot. Someone got stung by a bee.
Wow, I never had a four shot.
And got stung by a bee and puffed up like the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. So I had to bring the boat in as fast as possible. See, and you got lucky. We for a while, we didn't have the guns. You know, the guns got pulled out of the jungle. We had the air horns.
Right.
And not as much fun doing a long air horn blast.
And not as much fun without the real gun on boat. Come on.
Yeah, you can't do a six shot.
Absolutely.
Not as much fun. I always wanted to come in at Christmas and wrap the captain's crate there with some tissue paper, make it look like a Christmas present.
I remember my only six shot that I ever had was the boat derailed twice in one day, and the maintenance told Don Chapman, who was the lead at the time, told him that the boat is fine, take it out again, and Don was mad that they were giving him the same boat as going to derail, so Don handed me the gun, handed me six black shots, and said, go out and derail this boat for me. And I remember going out, and I didn't do anything different than I've done before, and it derailed right in the hippo pool, and there goes the six shots. I still got the empty bullet shells from it, too. I remember that very well.
Yep.
But, yeah, it's interesting because there's a lot of memorable things that you go through as a jungle cruise skipper. My second boat that I ever took out, you know, I'm still nervous about the spiel and the SOP and everything else. The very last people that get in my boat is Robin Williams and his family.
Yep.
Talk about a little bit of pressure to try to make somebody laugh, right?
Zelda and...
Absolutely.
Yeah.
He was more focused on his children, which was good, but it was a lot of fun. He came up to the very front of the boat afterwards and said, you're very funny. I thought, well, no, I'm lucky that he can say that for sure.
Yeah, the Robin Williams side, I got to meet him when he was filming Toys in Spokane.
Oh, yeah?
They filmed in the wheat fields of the Palouse. And we got into an elevator and at a hotel. And my grandmother was the most politically incorrect person I've ever met. And she was racist in a way that you didn't even know why this worked. She would talk about the yellow people and the red people, and the purple people. I'm not exactly sure who those were. But she, ridiculously inappropriate person. So we're in the elevator going down. Robin Williams gets into the elevator. And she says to him, I thought you were really great in that Bork and Mindy show. Totally butchers it.
Oops.
He looks over at her and just, you know, nice as can be, you must be my biggest fan. Nobody remembers that show like you. Just like... passed it off beautifully. So
I do remember standing at the top of the stairs at Thunder Mountain doing the, you know, counting people off into the rows, and who walks up but David Hasselhoff.
Yep.
And he walks up with his wife, gorgeous
Baywatch,
wife. And
Baywatch
him.
Time.
Baywatch. It's during Baywatch time, right? And he walks up and, stupid me, I blank on his name. And I go, oh, hey, you're... And he started going, Dick Van Dyke? And I'm like, no. Robin Williams? No, and he's playing this game with me the whole time. I'm like, I'm going to get it. And finally, someone else had to tell me when he came back into the station, I'm like, you're David Hasselhoff. He goes, nope, and walked away.
I had a point where I was, we had a downtime, and I was at front load. There's a guy in back of me who I think I know from my other business. And I'm like, God, you know, I know you from the camera store and whatever. He's like, nope. Said, keep on going. And I'm looking, I'm trying to think of where I know him from, and I don't associate it as a celebrity thing. And he's like, yeah, I was the runner-up on Top Chef season one. And I'm like, oh, geez. I had just seen the first, you know, Top Chef. He's standing right there. I'd been watching him on TV for like 16 weeks.
And he's thinking to himself, not famous enough.
Not famous enough. Got to bump it up a little bit. So
almost there, but not famous enough.
So what else celebrity-wise? Any other fun celebrity moments? Anything else that was...
Yeah, you know, back in the days, I think we saw everybody. So, Michael Jackson was the ongoing thing. I think I saw him in probably 4 or 5 different costumes at the time. And it was always fun actually watching him buy lunch for somebody and the person not knowing that who just bought lunch. Who's the chic guy that just bought me lunch? But, you know, it's interesting. Probably the ones that the Hasselhoff always sticks out at me because he was playing fun with me. And Robin Williams was a lot of fun. It was nice getting a compliment from him for sure. But, it was interesting. Some of the celebrities that actually came through were some of the Disney bigwigs.
Yeah.
I remember when Frank Wells and Michael Eisner were coming to the park. That was a big deal for us.
Oh, a big deal, yeah.
Frank Wells would always take the time to kind of talk to everybody. Michael Eisner kind of did his own thing. But, in fact, one of the I used to think was a celebrity was Jack Lindquist when he was running the park.
Yep.
I remember walking in backstage. It was myself and another fellow cast member, Mac McNabb. We were walking backstage, and Jack Lindquist was getting in his car to leave. He was, backstage. And he was just about to get in the car and shut the door. And we said, hey, Jack, have a good night. Jack was the kind of person that would literally get back. He got back out of his car, shut the door, and said, how's your day going? Tell me about what's going on in the park today. I mean, he would literally just want to know what's going on. That was kind of back in the day when the good old boys were still doing it.
Oh, yeah. Well, there were a lot of people who didn't have great experience with Cynthia Harris.
Mm-hmm.
I ran into Cynthia at a Ralph's grocery store. And I had talked to her briefly, maybe 6 months beforehand, one of the health things that they did, or one of the cast member benefit days or whatever it was. Talked to her briefly, maybe 5 minutes. She remembered where I worked. She remembered my name, which I had a hard time remembering anyone's name at the point.
Right.
My girlfriend's name, I wasn't even sure about.
Right.
But she knew where I worked and what we talked about down to a detail. We have a photography thing, and she's like, oh, you're still doing pictures of the park, and you know, how's the Jungle Cruise? And it blew me away that they had that attention to detail with the amount that they cared about what they were doing.
Well, that's, going back to one of the things you said is what do you carry after Disney? I mean, there were some supervisors that I worked for in the park that left a very big impression on me. Dave O'Mell, Jack Lindquist, John Burns, there were some supervisors that were those kind of people. They would remember a lot about you, but they would also, they just had a respect for you, and they would treat you like an equal, not sure. Like a supervisor / subordinate.
Yep.
It wasn't a thing back then, for sure.
Oh, and I have some people on my side. Dave Atkins.
Yeah.
Dave was my home team manager at California Adventure on Paradise Pier. We developed a great friendship. I still randomly run into him about once or twice a year out in public. And Dave, a phenomenal person. If there was a single person outside of probably Jerry York who, when they rode my boat, I had the most pride in coming off with a good boat, it was Dave. Like, I would put my boats together just to make Dave. He was a huge impression on me. But there's some people there now. Tony Montenegro. There's great people that are there, on the side who really made a huge difference. And, it really is a missing, I'm sure everyone likes to grumble about their boss. Everyone likes to bitch about all the times, the issues or whatever it is when people have to get fired for whatever reason. They're in a really rough position because they want to preserve the magic, and they sometimes have to go to extraordinary lengths to do it, and people forget that.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. Well, and I think as a supervisor at Disney, like you said, there's been generations. There's been kind of different types of generations. When I was back there, they were still really trying to keep the magic. And there was a time when I think after I left, there was a little bit more about efficiency, and they were getting pushed for that. It's nice to see them actually going back.
Oh, yeah.
To trying to do what they used to do, what they're good, what they're good at.
And I think that the mark, if you pick a single thing that shows that the company cares about what it's doing right now, I think World of Color is the best thing the park has done in a long time. I think World of Color as a show, as a spectacle, is absolutely gorgeous. Have you seen the show?
I have. You're still talking to somebody who helped open Fantasmic, well, so I'm still a little partial to that one.
No, and Fantasmic's great when they can get a dragon that actually works.
That's true. That's
one
true.
One that doesn't deflate in the middle of a show.
This is true.
No, and Fantasmic's a great show, but I mean, World of Color it's a spectacle again. It's something that you walk away from, and Fantasmic, yes, on a certain level. It's great. But I think that, even some of the things with the remodels that they're doing and, I think the rehab on Star Tours,
yeah,
it shows that they're getting back to some of those basics. I mean, the other issue now is that there's no such thing as downtime at the parks.
Right.
There's no slow period. So, you know, it's hard to find days.
I miss those days. Those days. I was trying to talk to my daughter, Lynette, and she's working there now, and telling her about those days when you walk down Main Street and there's only two or three guests on Main Street. She goes, "Dad, that just doesn't happen anymore."
No. No, and, you know, days when you would find five-minute waits at every ride in the park.
Absolutely.
You could just go on Star Tours over and over and over.
Yeah, we used
again.
To have to stand at the exit for Jungle Cruise and tell them it wasn't the entrance because there was nobody at the entrance the exit.
Nobody in the queue. I remember, you know, one of the the things I always enjoyed doing is when we had extra cast members, I'd go out and volunteer to stand at the entrance and bump our numbers up.
Absolutely.
I would go out there.
I remember that little bartering to try to get people to come in the line.
Yeah.
You had someone stand out between the two entrances out there. I remember that.
Come and ride the rivers of the world, Asia, Africa, South America, and Anaheim.
Yeah, that was back in the day when we used to do a lot of the spiels in the queue. When we used to have that thatch queue, we used to do a lot of the spiels in there because you could hear it walking by really, really well.
Yeah.
And we used to try to get people to come in the line.
I don't think the PA right now
I haven't heard the PA in there.
No, it's okay if you're in the line, but I don't think line jokes are
Vogue. Yeah, I haven't heard them
as much. There's a couple. I mean, there's still the Red Rubber Band.
Yes.
There's still the one that's around out there. We apologize. The Jungle Cruise will remain open all day.
Yeah, and the good thing about it was if you didn't make someone laugh going by, you at least made someone laugh standing outside of the treehouse because there was always somebody stationed at the treehouse.
Yeah.
You could hear the joke.
Yeah. it was definitely with, you know, I think the boathouse is great from the viewpoint that it, when the upstairs is used, it's a great show.
Absolutely.
You know, that upstairs area is a great part of the story.
You don't get up there that much.
Nope. No, although I do remember that there was a little prankster who decided to play it might have been a Jungle Cruise skipper. We had a large group of Japanese tourists, and they had done the upper queue, so it was a giant Mobius strip, and it just ran in circles. So they put this group of like 40 Japanese tourists up onto the top floor, and put them up the staircase, and then closed the staircase, and they literally just wandered in a giant circle upstairs for maybe like 5 minutes.
Too funny.
And I think eventually they let themselves out the indie queue, and they were very confused about what that ride was that they just did.
Too funny.
I also remember the steel drum band was one that I missed.
It was amazing.
That was,
it used to be amazing. They used to sit right at the exit. You know, it's interesting because I love the new queue. I mean, I love the theming and everything they've done. It's way better theming than the old one. However, there's some certain memories that I had from old ones that are just gone now. Like, we used to have the main line and the spur line. So there was the spur line where you used to, you know, kind of sit boats to die out there and just store them out there. Well, the fun thing was you always had to go get one of those boats, so you had to send somebody jumping across the boats to get to the spur side, right?
And you still do now.
You do. There's still a couple out there.
There's two boats. What you don't have is that the spur line doesn't run all the way through.
Doesn't have the switch, right?
It doesn't have the switch to bring it back on the front side.
Yep.
There's on the back side. You back the boat up past Trader Sam and then bring it on.
Right, because we used to actually throw the front switch and the back switch and make someone come out of the jungle and go back in the jungle again. Yeah, absolutely. I do remember that very, very well. Yeah.
And I always enjoyed the methane monster out past the spur line, where you'd have the bubbles of methane that just bubble up every once in a while from the decaying vegetable matter that was out there.
I remember running the skiff through that area pretty fast as well.
Yeah. I always wanted to go out there with like a stick lighter or like a propane torch on a long stick just to see if it would ignite.
Just you have your own little fantastic show.
Get some blue flame out there on the jungle. So what else? I mean, what do you think? As far as I know that we get some skippers who are at the park now, what's your pearl of wisdom? What's the thing that you tell them? I've always said that the number one thing for anyone at Disney is take pictures.
Mm-hmm.
I regret probably more than anything that I don't have more pictures of the people that I worked with in the time, and you know. So I mean, what's your pearl of wisdom? What do you think is important for the?
You know, it's interesting because I'm at that stage right now with my daughter, and she's, you know, working at the park, but she's probably getting her to the place where she's going to move on here in the next year and kind of leave the park and go on to her full-time real-world job. And, you know, as she's starting to leave, I'm starting to talk to her about those things. And one of the things I keep telling her was interesting, which is pictures. It's like, you got to get some pictures.
Oh, yeah.
You got to have pictures of that people can't get. You know, it's those pictures of the park or the attractions when just nobody's on it, or places where guests can't get to, because it is something you'll remember and say, look, I did that.
Yep.
And, you know, even you're saying about pictures about people, too. There was a picture that was just posted on Facebook like 2 weeks ago. I don't even remember being in, but I was in that picture. And I'm like, wow, look at all the friends that I haven't seen in a long time, and you know, reconnecting with them for sure.
Now, I mean, how large is the Club 951? There's a Facebook group, by the way, for skippers of a particular era. Which, by the way, wasn't that a show with Ray Romano?
exactly.
So I mean, how many people are associated with that?
You know, I think it's starting to gain a little bit more popularity even outside of 951. There's a lot of people that are starting to get interest into coming into 951. So I think we've let some other people in as well. But I don't know how big it's gotten. But I know the posts on it are almost daily and weekly now. Whereas when we first started it, I think there was, you know, just every now and then you get a post a month or
something.
Yeah, but I think now it's like daily and weekly. You get something a little bit new on there, or someone talking about some old story. And I know they've been selling some of the old shirts that we used to sell, the pictures of those shirts, and it's kind of a nice little walk down memory lane for me, for sure.
I know that Grant Pachoco was, Grant, I can pronounce your name finally, had one of the 93 shirts that he put up a picture of from there.
Yep.
And, yeah, no, it's good. And, you know, we're one of the two things we're really pushing for. We're going to try to get some Walt Disney World cast members, skips from the East Coast, in future episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever been down to Orlando?
I have, many times.
It's really interesting.
Many times.
Really interesting.
It's weird being on a ride that you just know like the back of your hand, and then just throw some twists into it that you go, I didn't see that one.
Yeah, there's a lot. Well, and also I think that the big difference for me is that the ride is more cartoony.
Very.
Whereas,
although going in the cave is a pretty cool idea.
Cave is so cool.
I think any Jungle Cruise skipper from California that goes into the cave goes, we should have had a cave.
Yeah, we should have gone under the railroad tracks.
Absolutely.
Under the railroad tracks, you know, just punch it in the elephant pool and go through the elephants.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that would have been very nice.
You know what's interesting, though, looking back on the whole idea of pearls of wisdom is enjoy it while you have it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I look back at my time at Disneyland and say, you know, that was probably the best experience that I've ever had and some of the funnest times I've ever had. Would I ever go back? No. You graduate
because
from
it. Because the memories wouldn't be the same.
No, they wouldn't. They wouldn't. But the time when you're there, you really have to soak them up. Because there are some times in there that I think, God, I wish I would have actually taken that a little bit slower, or done that, appreciated that a little bit more when I was doing it. Because, you know, we all had those times when we complained about going around the river over and over again. I'd have a blast doing the river now.
I still, volunteer army, I'd go do it tomorrow.
Absolutely.
I would jump in a boat tomorrow and tell SOP jokes till the cows came
And
home.
I remember kicking and screaming going into some of those ships.
Oh, yeah. Especially when it was raining and your socks were getting wet and you did not want to be out there in that.
Oh, my gosh, the old boats. I don't know if the new boats have that, but the old boats used to collect water on top of those canopies.
Yep.
Oh, and you go around that first corner, you could soak the entire side of the boat.
You know, since we're talking about rain... I remember there was a time we had a pretty good downpour, and there's now the canvases that are overlooking the dock, so the dock doesn't get as wet.
We used to get soaked out there on that dock.
But one of those had probably 2 or 3, 4 gallons of water, and the thing was just, you know, about to break down. So one of the skips grabs an oar and goes out to try to push it. And the water shifts, and every drop of it went into the queue and soaked every single guest that was sitting there. It was like, oh, really? That was great. Do it again.
I remember the old dock, when it was raining, there would always be two rivers. There would be the river of the Jungle Cruise, and there would be another river that used to come down through Adventureland, and it went right to the lead desk.
Yeah.
And it would literally dump into the lead desk at your feet, and it was about, I think, a 3-foot drop right into your shoes. So any rainy days, you had to stand on the opposite side of the lead desk just so you wouldn't get soaked because of that river coming down. Well, I do remember that one.
Yeah, no, and it's I think the natural disasters were always our fun. You know? the fires and the Fullerton fire where the sky was, you know, red and ash was coming down in the middle of January or February, whatever it was.
Well, people always ask, you know, how come you're so close to people that you used to work with at Disneyland? And it's interesting because when you think about it, there's people that, you know, those are the people that you kind of, like you said, kind of gone to war with. It's people that you work Christmas Day with. It's people that you work, you know, January 4th with and gone through some crazy things with. And it's, you know, you get that camaraderie going.
Yep. I still miss, I miss New Year's Eve at the park. I had a run where I did Tiki. I closed Tiki 3 times on New Year's Eve. And that was amazing. I mean, that's one of those, you know, being there in the park with now they have the bands. And,
right.
Yeah. I mean, that's an incredible experience. I had people that I stayed in touch with, guests who had stayed in touch with me for years after one of the New Year's Eve shifts.
Interesting.
Just, you know, had wanted my contact info. It was start of where email was starting to get around. And,
right.
And I think that changes it too. I mean, I think that the, yeah. you know, it, I guess we haven't really talked about this as part of the Disney thing is media is so consumable right now. You've got YouTube, you've got DVDs, you've got the internet, all those things that should, by every right, strip out some of the magic out of Disney.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because now it's accessible. It's not, we can only go once a year. People can, you know, stay with it and follow it on a regular basis. They can sell, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars a day in Vinylmations. You know, they can do all that. And but there's something still particularly about Jungle and particularly about, I mean, the park in general, where that hasn't gone away, even mm-hmm. though by all rights, you know, maybe that would have diminished something else.
Right.
But, you know, the internet and all that, it hasn't pulled it away. It just made the people who want to be fanatic more fanatic.
I was going to say, in almost all of the different medias and stuff has enhanced it a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, when my daughter, Lynette, when she hired in, she's doing Bippity Boppity Boutique. So she's making up the girls and the dresses and everything else. And
sure.
one of the things they told her when she first started training is, you're going to be on YouTube a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, people are putting their home videos out there. And, you know, everyone's getting a little bit more of a taste of Disney.
Sure.
But they're not getting the behind the scenes and the different things yeah. that would almost ruin it at times. They're just getting a little bit of taste of what they can.
I cannot even think about how many videotapes that I'm on.
Right.
After, you know, my time, 3.5-4 years of doing Jungle almost every day. I can't even imagine how much video I'm on out there. I think all the skippers are.
Yeah, well, my daughters love that the one claim to fame I have is on the Disney sing-along video. I'm the Jungle Cruise skipper that's helping the people on the boat and helping Donald onto the boat. And it's only like my arm at one point or another in the video, but it's like, you know, the Mike Wazowski little scene. Oh, there's my arm right there in the video.
But yeah, I mean, I think that the... I think we all have that magic, and it is definitely the time that you're there is the time that you're there. It's never going to be the same as you go in and out of it. Everyone used to appreciate it, and every generation, it's their jungle.
Yeah.
You know, and you can look back, and it really can't say better or worse. It's just everyone.
It's different.
Everyone has their moments.
And it's funny because I feel the same way where my generation that I got to be a part of. They still are. They're my best friends.
Yep.
And that generation is very different than the generation today. But it's not better or worse. It's just very different.
Yeah.
Like, I can't imagine trying to work on the Jungle Cruise now with this environment. It would just be so different for me.
Well, and you also had an environment where yours was an all-male cast.
All-male cast.
So, you know, it was before, you know, Sue Barnaby and, you know, the first...
Well, it'd have been forbidden in that world to bring a girl over into our world.
Oh, the glass ceiling, yeah.
Yeah, that wouldn't have worked.
Well, because we all know that female skippers aren't funny, which is the biggest...
Hey, you said that, not me.
Now, you know, we have disproven that so many times that the Sherry Ribbles and there's so many... Tiffany Davis. I mean, I can the arm long length of Allison Nichols. All the girls I worked with were all phenomenal. They were just different.
Yeah, well, and the park was even divided a little bit, right? Because Adventureland Frontierland was mostly males because you had the Mark Twain, you had the Jungle Cruise. You know, you had a couple of females come over for Tiki Room and Thunder, but it was mostly males.
Yeah, and Fantasy was very female.
It was very female because you had Storybook, which was all female. So it was really the fraternity on one side and the sorority on the other. And because of that, we treated each other that way, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I think the sentimentality, I think it's good that... It's the reason why we're doing the podcast, and I'll just reiterate this. The reason we're doing this podcast, no one's making any money off of this. We're simply doing this as an oral history so people can sit back and relax and have a good time and listen to some of the stories so they don't get lost in the ether, and which is a good point for me to make my plea. If you know... anyone who was a Jungle Cruise skipper in the 1950s, 60s, or 70s, that is definitely an area we're trying to find people very actively to sit down and talk to us. 80s as well. We want to hear every story. So a couple different ways you can get in touch with us. I'll say it again, junglecruise@gmail.com, C-R-E-W-S. If you're technically savvy, feel free to record a WAV file. Get in contact with me, and I'll get you a system for getting it over to us. We would love, if you want to do some interviews or hang out with friends or talk about Jungle, we'll more than happily edit those together and put them on the podcast. This is not a one-man show. It just happens that I've so far been the person who's been able to sit down and record this. We definitely want everyone in the community's opinions and their stories and what they think about the experience. So please feel free to get in touch. Also email me with any stories you want to share. I'll be happy to read them and share them on the podcast. And we're just keeping on growing. I really appreciate everyone. This has been a 3.5 month thing where I thought, oh, I was going to do it once or twice and it wouldn't catch on or be too expensive. And, you know, we just, it's blowing up and it's great because everybody loves a Jungle Cruise skipper.
And as a fan of the program, too, I would say for all the skippers that are out there, get involved, because it, just listening to Chris and your last podcast was walking down the memory lane for me. And, you know, I was in the park just a week ago with Tim Meltrager and Chris Lamberth, and we were doing the same thing, just not with a microphone in front of us, just going back through old stories again.
Yep.
You know, sitting with Scott Kelly and Jim Ogletree in Vegas, and we were doing the same thing. We were just sitting there going through skipper stories. Mm-hmm. And, in fact, it was funny because Scott Kelly had to look at his dad and say, hey, every time we get together, we do the same thing, so sorry, we're going to go through the same stories over again that you heard last time we were together.
So really the important thing is bring a hidden microphone anytime
next
you hang
time
out,
absolutely
just record it and send it over. So very much appreciated, everyone. Anyone else you want to give a shout out to, or
else? I think I'm good, but to all of my friends out there on the JC, it's good seeing you guys in the park again every time I'm there, and if you can get involved with this, because I think it'd be nice to hear your stories as well.
Good. Well, cool. Cool. James, definitely appreciate it. Everyone out there in the Internet Adventureland, I'd like to wish you all a hearty and happy Kungaloosh. Please join us on our Facebook page at facebook.com/junglecruise, C-R-E-W-S. And we're looking forward to seeing you out there. And thank you all so much for the support. Thanks, guys. We'll see you later.